Fly down, rainbows in the sky, let's fly away. Like a bird, you're free to see the boundless face of the earth. Let the wind blow you like a kite. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Destructo Discourse. This is a Dragon Ball Z rewatch podcast. You're listening to episode 26. I am your host, Tyler, and joining the discourse this time is Gordy.
How's it going?
Jason. Aaron.
Hadouken.
Melissa.
Is that this one?
That's the one.
Yeah.
I don't know where I am.
Yoga Fire. And Dave. Dave is here.
Hello.
Also Dave.
I am here.
This is the first episode of season 3, quote unquote. For us.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, well, it's what Funimation calls season 3 of this show called Dragon Ball Z Hit Anime.
Their futile attempts to constrain...
to bind it.
Yeah, Toriyama's horrible vision.
blasphemer.
So, Dave, you didn't get to join us in our last official episode, and you had some lingering thoughts.
I did.
About the universe... of Dragon
yes.
Ball.
I've been coming to terrifying conclusions, which is that the trend that Aaron has begun for us of Dragon Ball Z actually kind of making sense may continue, and it's terrible.
What have
we can't have that.
This absolutely cannot be.
What hath I wrought?
Well, I have to share this nightmare with you all so that as the most qualified people possible, we can decide whether this knowledge needs to be concealed.
How, before we get going, how close do each of you feel to being a Dragon Ball expert since we began?
I broke out into a small sweat when you said the most qualified people possible.
Yeah. I mean... I've been riding this train since day one, and I'm more lost than ever.
On a scale from 1 to 10, Bulma.
Yes.
Ooh, that bad, huh?
I mean, you said rewatch podcast. This is a watch podcast.
This is a watch podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some of us.
For me also.
For fully half the people on this episode.
So, and it's also entirely possible that all the conclusions that I've come to... the next episode after the point I've watched up to will throw all of them in the trash. But
well, that's just exciting.
Yeah,
Goku just does a slam dunk.
All over my meta.
Well, the secret plan of this podcast for me was to get you guys to carry joke milk every week until you do become experts of Dragon Ball. Without even realizing it.
That works for me.
I don't usually get grossed out by like milk references, but that one got me.
That one did it.
That was not
joke
great.
Milk.
No.
All right, Dave, before we venture into the great unknown going forward, let's tie up your loose ends. What do you have for us?
Okay, so first off, I want to go back to... people have been kind of asking this question on and off the whole time, but then it really came to a head with the last set of episodes, which was the Ginyu and Goku body swap, where a lot of questions arise. And now, I will say, this may not be the most interesting version of the story, but I think it is the one that makes sense given the information that we are shown.
Sometimes that's just the way.
Yeah. Well, that's why fan fiction exists. Which is that I do buy, as was stated recently, that the purple-horned big brain man that we see Captain Ginyu as is his original body, and that he has never actually used that technique before. And the reason I buy that is because entire time it did not make a lick of sense to me how... Goku, he was apparently unable to properly use Goku's body, and Goku's like, haha, you don't understand how to manage a body that you're not familiar with. And it's like, the what person, maybe in the entire galaxy, who should explicitly be good at this, apparently isn't good at it.
Who might have some previous mileage.
Yeah, maybe. But that is what makes me makes me think that he doesn't.
Now, do you think he's never done it with anybody, or that he's never done it with a body that powerful?
That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like Goku body is kind of an exception.
I think there's some complicated musculature, maybe, I guess. Like,
maybe some metaphysical stuff going on.
It's basically all muscles. And there are a lot of them, and maybe he just got lost in the many muscles in Goku.
He started to drown in solid, you know, muscle tissue.
He doesn't have bones. They're just muscles that are continually tensed.
Very tight muscles.
He was surprised by how underdeveloped the brain was in his body.
I don't want to get too off of your track, Dave, but I was going to say, he swapped bodies, and he's just like, there is no math in here. There's none. I've looked.
How much of a change is that, though?
He went from an SUV and he drove off the lot in a Toyota Yaris. Well, there's no room.
This all has possible connections.
It was the presence of sport drink.
He's driven regular cars, and he's driven cars with like a stick shift. But then he jumped into a mech.
Something like that. Well, it's yeah, there's other stuff regarding Captain Ginyu, but like the big thing was that like it was questioned like why they were not able to use one another's techniques when they were in each other's bodies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how that there seems to be some kind of, you know, inherent property that is transferred back and forth. Mm-hmm. Which, now that I think about it, means that in theory, Frog Ginyu could use beans.
In theory.
Do you mean the frog brain in Ginyu's body?
No, frog brain, that's the point I'm trying to make. My thought is that, and this is why, like, you see Goku do a little bit of training with Kamehameha's and whatnot, but it's mostly just all workouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is why I posit that the brain and the soul is the technique, is knowing how to do the beams. The body is the battery. The better your body, the more battery you have to do beams with. So,
So
being
like
the most supremely ripped guy in the universe who has trained in zero how much gravity it is, he's still a dumbass, but he has so much battery, guys. Like, you could take that thing on a plane, like a flight all the way to Australia, and you'll still have battery left to write with. Hmm. So that's what, you know, Ginyu and Goku run into there. And that might have something to do with it, too. It's literally more energy than he knows what to do with. You were
how
saying
to
that,
handle,
actually.
Yeah. There are certain techniques later on that characters do that lend credence to that, I will say.
Hmm.
The battery theory.
You think if Ginyu swapped into, like, Gohan, number one, super creepy, but, like, Gohan brain and Ginyu body, would he just be throwing out Masenkos? You think he
could? I would say no, but I would theorize that whatever this supposed, like, secret hidden power that Gohan has that everybody keeps talking about, I bet Ginyu would be able to use it.
Hmm.
Now, this brings me around back to something else, which we have been... we have been confused about the entire show thus far, which is like, why is everybody so surprised by the fact that Earthlings can power up and quote unquote hide their power levels when the rules of how that stuff works literally runs their entire world? And I think Ginyu is the singular person we have met in the entire show, including Frieza, unless I'm very much mistaken, because Frieza needs a scouter, who knows that that's a thing. And I realized, because the big hole we had found, we had thought maybe it was something special to Earth, like that it was special to humans, or it was special to whatever tradition most of the Z Fighters come from, or whatever, but then it happens on Namek, too. So we were like, alright, well, that just takes care of that. And then I realized, okay, so in the world that the Frieza Forest and all these other space people exist in, the only thing that can ever matter in terms of running anything, or leading an army, or anything like that, is beam power. Nothing else matters, because you can be the best leader in the world, but if your entire army is made up of people who can kill you with their pinky finger, then you can't. You're done.
Right.
And so, by definition, the leader of anything has to be the most beam-powerful person there. Which means that nobody would ever want to appear as anything other than how strong they actually are.
Hmm.
I posit that concealing your power level, or, you know, it's not that they're concealing their power levels, is that it's that Earthlings and Namekians don't have them on at maximum all the time, because they don't need to. Because Namekians are peaceful, and Earthlings are debatably peaceful, but Z-Warriors at least come from a tradition that is, like, monastic. Like,
Namekians
fighting
are peaceful,
is not...
Earthlings are idiots.
Yes. Yeah. Z-Fighters in general are not about, you know, we don't want to dominate and intimidate and screw up other people, we just want to get stronger. It's not about violence, it's about self-improvement.
Sure.
So
they don't live in a constant state of beam hegemony.
Yes, exactly.
It's the
and
fight,
so,
not the victory.
In theory, everybody has that power, but everybody in that world has... nobody has ever needed to use it, because it's like, wait, you aren't as strong as you can be all the time? Why don't people stab you in the back if they think you're weaker than you are? Like, that's just the automatic thought process for anybody in that world. That is my theory. For because with Frieza in particular, I did not buy it, that someone could get that far and become that powerful without understanding that this really basic function of how energy beams work. But
I mean, yeah,
maybe that is the very reason, because, like, strength is all he cares about, and also that explains the fact that people, you know, transform to become more powerful, because then that's a physical thing. If the body is the battery, if you transform like Zarbon and Frieza can, then you're switching to a mech with a better battery. Basically. These are my thoughts.
While you were talking, I thought about maybe not an alternate theory, but maybe a parallel theory for why Ginyu has a hard time with Gohan's body.
That's the AU that I'm not going to write.
The other guy. After watching the Bardock special that now I'm thinking about, because the question is brought up about whether or not Goku shares Bardock's psychic powers. And so I wonder if in Goku's body, Ginyu experienced some visions that he had no idea how to, like, interpret. Along the likes of how, you know, Bardock did when he first got tapped by the fish man.
As they say.
Tapped by the fish man for the very first time.
Yes.
The new hit Madonna song.
Like a fish man.
Jesus. I don't know, I'm seeing Ginyu in his frog form at the end of that last series of episodes before the Bardock special, looking on as the dragon was summoned with a tear in his eyes. And I refuse to accept the implication that's probably being communicated with the kiss on the frog's cheek and the tear. So I want to come up with other reasons.
That's a fair point.
And so I wonder if this is more of an existential despair for Captain Ginyu, realizing that his visions were true. He saw himself becoming a frog and the dragons being summoned and didn't want to accept it. But then looking on, he saw and knew that he was not the main character of this universe.
No.
He must accept the story as it
is. What a thing to grapple with.
Right?
With, like, the limited capacity that a frog body provides.
Existential terror is bad enough.
It's like water trickling through a very thick sponge.
Well, I love the idea that, like, Ginyu's frog brain no longer has the ability to properly, you know, contain his thoughts. And so all that remains is just, like, this overriding impulse of professionalism and dedication to the mission. It's like, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore, but I know I have to do it for Frieza.
I gotta get it done.
Gotta get these balls.
It's a bizarre Flowers for Algernon kind of. Flowers, Flowers for Ginyu. Frogs for Ginyu.
Flowers for Ginyunon. Ginyu. No, stop.
I would like
Froggers
to...
Frogers for Frogginon.
There you I go. Would like to oh, entertain yes. a possibility. It's kind of related. That the, not Ginyu in the frog body, but the other one. The frog in the Ginyu's body. I would like to entertain that that body escaped Namek and went
how?
To other worlds. I don't know. And and slowly learned how to use that body to full capacity.
Gordy, you know that we have a segment for this, right?
We do.
It
oh,
comes
yeah, yeah,
at
yeah.
the end of the show.
All right. Okay. We'll put a pin in that then.
We'll just add Frenu and Grog to.
I guess that segment.
No, that's a different podcast.
I guess that segment is really a catch-all for like any horseshit we can think of,
basically
at this point.
Yep. That's why I love it.
I absolutely buy both the beam theory that's been presented and Ginyu's crushing existential crisis. I'm ready to deem both of those canon for this show.
Excellent.
Send the eagle out to Toriyama mm-hmm. with the message.
We have a new missive for
we
you.
We cracked it.
We've solved your puzzle.
Pick up your pen, bastard. Put down the cigarettes.
Get to drawing.
Guys, please don't disrespect the author.
Mm-hmm. I agree with this.
Well, are you guys ready to talk about the new episodes this week of hit anime Dragon Ball Z? This week we are covering episodes 76, 77, and 78.
And how are we watching this little-known indie gem?
Most of us are watching the Funimation dub. There are a few of us who dip into the subs every once in a while just to see what's going on over there.
Hey, it's real different.
Yeah, I hear that there's some disparities this week.
Oh, I'm excited.
Oh boy.
Episode 76, the English title is Piccolo's Return.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Kami also returns to life. Piccolo is resurrected by Super Shenlong.
Was that out of order? Those sentences out of order?
I mean, they kind of just work together.
Yeah, if you put the two titles together.
Just, they're English and Japanese hand in hand this week.
And also me.
The English just didn't think Kami was important enough.
Mm. They're not wrong.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
His purpose is to exist.
Yeah.
So the Dragon Balls exist. So this episode begins. The Z gang are all huddled up around the eternal dragon of Namek, the dragon of love, as we learned before, Purunga.
The beefiest Shenron.
He's so.
Whoa.
Can we just take a minute and appreciate all of his very strong muscles and spikes, but then his tiny little Namekian antenna?
Yes!
Yeah, right?
So
that's good. My favorite thing.
I mean, it makes me wonder why Shenron doesn't have those.
Well, yeah, and also, like, so I guess Kami's idea of what the dragon is supposed to be like is pretty wimpy but scrawny.
He based it off a Chinese myth dragon.
But really long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Shen Long. This is Shen Beefy.
Shen Thick.
Shen Thick! Shen yes!
Oh, no.
Yes! With five C's.
Krillin, still very excited that they get three wishes instead of one.
This is the second time, isn't it? That he's apparently like not known that?
It's like the third or fourth day. he
God
keeps
damn it,
forgetting.
Krillin.
But he is ready to turn around on Namek. He is on board now. This is a great place. He loves it.
That's the best dragon.
How many days has it been that it's all been one day?
It's impossible to tell because like three suns.
Is he having like the midnight sun madness?
Oh, oh, for sure.
Which midnight sun?
All three of them.
Which midnight and which sun?
Oh, he's got a case of the triple midnight.
It's a wild sensation.
Their very first wish is to bring back all of their buddies who Vegeta and Nappa killed, but that is unacceptable. So says the dragon. Only one life can be brought back per wish.
This beefy dragon boy, the English one is kind of a dick.
He's very short-tempered.
He's got some great shade.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's largely due to his immense size.
Yeah, that's also due to the English script, because in the Japanese one, he's, like, super proper. And is asking, like, "Wherest thou wishest upon me?" Like, that kind of shit.
This is, like, a really fancy, like, a dialect or choice of words that, you know, is very respectful.
Yeah, kind of old-timey.
Okay.
Also, the way he words it, Krillin asks for everyone on Earth the Saiyans killed to be brought back to life.
Not just their friends.
Yeah.
Welcome back, East City.
He doesn't specify.
He doesn't say anything. Oh, wait, I forgot. No, Vegeta killed people on Namek. I can see why that wish would be unacceptable.
He did. Well, now, stop me. Is this... Did they use the Dragon Balls in the first show to bring back more than one person?
I believe they have.
Multiple people at once?
I believe that's the case on the Earth Dragon Balls, which is why they were surprised that it didn't work here.
Yeah.
And which kind of makes me question, like, Guru was talking hot shit about how good his dragon was.
Right?
And how you get three wishes.
Like, so
and it's
powerful.
Way more powerful, but it can't even do one of the Earth wishes.
He put all his points into beef.
Do you get three to disguise the fact that they're worse wishes?
That they're wimpier wishes.
But you get three of them.
But they're weak.
It does seem to be the case.
Correct me if it's different in the Japanese, but in the English he says it's unacceptable. Not that he can't do it.
Ah.
Yeah, that sounds... He would say that.
He's insulted.
He finds it a lot distasteful.
This is... Yeah. Rude.
You don't get three mega wishes. You get three okay wishes.
I like how he, the dragon speaks English, or like common, but you have to make the wishes in Namekian.
I noticed that too.
Like, he can understand them if they make the wishes in their own language, but he won't do it.
It's unacceptable.
Maybe he's just decided that Dende is the best of them and will only listen to Dende.
We cut over to King Kai's planet, where everyone is distraught to hear the news that they can't all be brought back with one wish. And you guys...
This interaction is so good.
Very good.
I've watched this show multiple times. I don't know if that's clear. I've seen this show a lot. And it hasn't been until we started recording this podcast that I fully began to realize just how bad everyone is at math in this fucking show.
Yep.
Because Tien needs to count on his goddamn
fingers
how many of them there are.
Or just count his eyes and add
Precious
one.
Boy. Yeah, Yamcha shows
damn
up.
It, Yamcha.
I know, 3 plus 3 plus 1 is 4.
I am the dragon power. And I can res this many.
This dragon is pretty light on patience, and he suggests that they wish for nothing 3 times and stop wasting his time.
Fuck it. Really good sandwiches.
I don't have all day. What else you got going on, big boy?
I mean, maybe he knows that he's about to die. Spoilers.
Good point.
Real quick, just to go back real quick. Tien and Yamcha fighting in the English version is super childish, and it gets worse in a minute when it goes back to them.
It's very cute.
In the Japanese one, I had to look up a word. I learned a new word today, guys.
Oh, nice.
Because Yamcha said, the way it's subtitled, Yamcha says, "I died first, so I should go back first." And Tien says, "That's chop logic." And
that's
I've never
logic?
Heard that word before. That's
like what? Chalk zone?
It's one word, chop logic. I guess it's supposed to mean like an over-involved argument or something. Which I don't agree with, because Yamcha's pretty straightforward on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He did die first.
That's easy enough to follow.
Maybe Tien doesn't know what it means.
He's been misusing it his whole life.
Yeah.
He didn't focus on math, but he did real good on his spelling tests and vocabulary.
Yeah, he had a word a day calendar.
Oh, yeah.
He
was raring to just bust that one out.
Every day, get up. Pick the word of the day and go with waterfalls.
I got it for him for Christmas, and he was so excited.
As everybody is arguing, Piccolo is dead set on being the one that gets sent back, and he asks to speak to Gohan through King Kai's telepathy.
Well, did they talk about... I think the original plan was, like, there's 4 of us, there's 3 wishes, so they assume, well, they're going to bring 3 of us back, right?
Mm-hmm. And they have to decide who goes first.
Who goes first.
Or who gets left behind, as if it's a question other than Chapsu.
Yeah, the answer is staring everyone in the face. through two little clown eyes.
Tien doesn't want to talk about it.
Don't you think Chapsu could just be like a plus one?
Does he count?
Like you wish for Tien and Chapsu just kind of grabs onto him real tight.
I was going to say, yeah, he just hangs onto his back.
You could just hide him down Tien's pants and he would come back.
You can spray that right on his back.
Dragon wouldn't notice him.
You smuggle them in an overcoat.
Look, the dragon is very large and very high up there. I doubt he can even see Chaozu.
Dragon's got other things on his mind, clearly.
Yeah, I don't think he really cares one way or the other.
No, he doesn't.
But it's about what's proper, clearly.
I mean, I can technically check you as luggage, so like, do I really need to use a whole wish on you?
Piccolo concocts his plan with Gohan, and everyone is getting really upset with him on King Kai's planet, even though I think it's, like, glaringly obvious what he's getting at, which is that if they wish him back first, Kami will also come back.
Piccolo's fucking face at the idiots yelling at him about what's fair. He's got this teeny tiny little frown and slightly crossed eyes and sweat. I have made that face before playing sports with small children, yelling about what's fair.
How many times has this happened now where somebody hails someone as a genius, usually using that exact word for knowing something that everyone has known for literal decades about this
and
world?
And just didn't think of.
Yeah.
Because if they bring Kami back, the Dragon Balls on Earth will not be broke no more. And they can just use those, and then they don't have a problem.
So smart.
You rock, Piccolo.
Oh my god. Forgot about that.
Gohan got the cutest little smile when he heard Piccolo's voice.
He did. I love kind of the whole interaction between Piccolo and King Kai, and we can get more into that later. But when Piccolo first picks up the phone, so to speak, he's shouting, "Gohan, it's me!" King Kai says, "You don't have to yell." Piccolo just says, "Oh, sorry." And then says the same exact thing, but quieter.
My bad. He heeds the librarian going, "Shh."
That's all English, for the record. It's played completely straight in the Japanese version. Which is the beginning of a theme for these episodes.
What do you mean by played straight?
King Kai says, "Okay." And Piccolo starts talking, and that's it.
Oh.
There's no back and forth.
No banter.
Oh. Yeah.
There's no King Kai only broadcasting Piccolo to Gohan until King Kai thinks of a joke to say, and then he starts broadcasting to Krillin.
There is not. There's no 10 cents a minute joke.
It's a halfway decent joke, too.
The Japanese King Kai does criticize Piccolo, though, for not using the Sama honorific when he's talking to Gohan. He just says he's using Kaio. That's when King Kai gets angry at him. Says,
oh, such disrespect.
So cocky.
Piccolo's second wish is to be sent to Namek to avenge his people, which might be counterintuitive to that first wish.
Yeah, we need the Dragon Ball person, like, locked safe away.
Well, that's not... Well, hang on, I'll wait for my problem with that wish. So it'll come up in a minute.
And then they can just use their last wish on whatever. Piccolo doesn't care. King Kai chews Piccolo out for his selfish wishes and for ignoring his advice.
You use me for my training and tell me to take a hike.
In the English, at least, I assume it's different. But Piccolo wistfully sort of waxes about how this must be what it's like to have a mom.
Oh my god, this is
such
so
a good,
good
line.
He makes the best face.
Yeah, he says that and he's so proud of that line.
God, he just grins so at the good, it would trigger a Zenkai boost.
Yeah, he just smirks at the camera like, nailed it.
Got him.
Wait, nails in the next episode.
To be fair, King Kai is kind of embodying what a mother is in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. They teach you spirit bombs and stuff.
Does your mom not teach you that? No, well, you had a crap mom then.
Don't go fight that guy.
Use your words.
Don't listen.
The Japanese one just has them doing that thing where King Kai is like, "You promised not to fight Frieza," and Piccolo's like, "I don't remember saying that."
Clever.
Yeah.
I didn't agree to shit, buddy.
Yeah, the problem with promises to King Kai is that he has no way to sort of, like, collect on them.
Yeah.
He has no threats to make. They are meaningless.
Very
empty. I guess he cannot take them in if they die again.
I guess.
Like, not train them anymore.
But they'll still just fall on his planet. It's got big gravity.
It's just a big sign at the end of Snakeway that's just got, like, their faces on it and, like, a big red X.
None of these people.
Vegeta wakes with a start, and he feels a huge power coming toward him. Probably Frieza.
Who else would it be?
I mean, he killed everybody else. The checklist is Frieza at this point.
Yeah.
He checks outside, and he's upset that he overslept because it's nighttime now. But then he realizes, oh wait, like three suns. It's not nighttime.
Shit.
Those fucking earthlings are just pulling a fast one.
Oh, those jerks.
I do like that feeling when you take a nap and then you wake up and it's nighttime.
That's the worst. Yeah.
The old summon the dragon while I'm sleeping trick.
Well, he says they tried to summon the dragon without... It's like, no, Vegeta, they successfully summoned the dragon without you.
They did it.
Yeah. I couldn't help but note when Frieza is flying towards them, very angry. We get a close up of his face. He got his lipstick back in between shots
from the last episode.
He reapplied.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
The tube says it was an 8-hour wear, but it was really a 6.
It always lies.
Mm-hmm. As the dragon revives Piccolo, Vegeta runs outside to see it looming in the sky. And Vegeta and Frieza both begin to converge on the dragon party from opposite directions. And we cut over to Popo, who still exists.
There he is.
Just hanging out.
He's watering the garden. He's impressed by high-altitude butterflies.
Yep.
Fairly so.
I mean, I would be.
And Kami fades back into existence. As Dende prepares to make the second wish, Krillin clues into Vegeta headed their way. So he quickly makes his wish and Piccolo is teleported to Namek. But their wish was not very specific, so Piccolo was sent to just some random spot.
Ah.
Alright, now, I have an issue here. Uh-huh. The wish, specifically, the first wish, was for Piccolo to be returned to their dimension.
Correct.
Which it definitely did not do.
It made the halo go away.
It made him alive, but still in King Kai's dimension.
I do believe that is just a holdover from the not saying kill in the ocean dub.
He was just sent to another
dimension.
Yeah.
This knife will take
you into the shadow realm.
But we are taking it as it is presented, so you do have a point.
Yeah.
So, he was returned to life, which was not specified in the wish, but not returned to their dimension, which was specified in the wish.
This is a bullshit dragon.
he's fucking genie dragon.
Really not living up to the hype.
No.
Guru, buddy, I love you, but...
Vegeta shows up at this point, and he's not very happy. He's actually quite upset. Gohan tries to smooth things over, and he tells Vegeta that they still have one wish left, so he can use that one.
Vegeta here in Japanese, I don't remember if he did this before, he probably did. He does refer to himself as Vegeta-sama.
That's amazing.
I mean, nobody else is gonna. He might as well.
Something has to. So
he would get along with King Kai. They see eye on some things.
You know, I really want to see that meeting now.
In terms of respect.
So this episode has the best ending. Immediately after returning from the dead, Piccolo says, "You only live once."
I made a note here about this scene.
So good.
It's only one word though. Piccolo.
All right, I'm done. Okay. Have fun with the rest of the episode, guys.
It was your episode title.
Da 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 da.
That's on brand.
Dende tries to wish for Vegeta's immortality after Krillin coaxes him into it, but something seems wrong with the dragon.
Yeah, someone despawns his model.
turn him off and turn him back on again and see if that helps.
They put him on lineless.
Yeah, someone turned off the line layer in Photoshop.
Oh no.
The Dragon Balls fall out of the sky like literal stones.
Oh.
Because they are literal stones.
They are now stones. And Dende knows exactly what has happened, because Guru has died.
Mm-hmm.
And he took the dragon with him.
We know he dies because he turns into a painting.
I did like Guru.
He's a sweet old man.
Dende says he's like a grandfather to him, which yeah, is weird. Which... Because he's literally his father.
He's a father to him.
I did write that down.
I would be surprised if Namekians knew what a grandfather was.
He's your literal dad.
Yeah. Your actual real green dad.
He's like a grandfather. He is my father.
Maybe grandfathers are like mythical creatures to very young Namekians now.
Yeah. I've been entertaining the possibility that Nail was on hand to kill Guru himself in this situation. Like, in the moment where, like, Vegeta was about to make the wish, and Nail's like, sorry, Guru.
Somebody had to do the deed.
I can't let this happen.
Oh, wow.
Like, no, I think Guru told him to do that.
He is the...
I don't think Guru would have objected at all to that.
He is the revolver with a single bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oof. Ooh, that's strong.
That's good.
Vegeta is furious that he has not gotten his immortality.
He's very sensitive to this child's loss.
He gets ready to murder everybody for betraying him. But as he approaches, he stops dead in his tracks. And what? The episode ends with Frieza on a little cliffside, staring down at them, very angry himself. Any closing thoughts for 76?
I will say that the majority of this episode and what really padded out the runtime was the fact that most of the dialogue was just literally 5 or 6 people arguing about where to go for dinner. Revive me. No, revive
Not
me.
Wrong.
No, what are we using for our second wish? No, wait, no. Who's lactose intolerant?
That's what makes it relatable.
Yeah. Agreed.
It kind of gives a sense of time to the folks who've been on King Kai's planet. Because we learn, I feel like, a little bit about what King Kai's life has been for the last month. And it's Yamcha combing his hair a lot, Chaozu cheating at things, Tien being a good boy and trying very hard to count or strategize, and Piccolo slowly learning how to throw shade.
I really, really like the back half of this episode. It's probably one of my favorite bits of the whole Namek storyline, as it's just a good building of tension as things continue to get bad and worse.
Yeah.
And you're just really worried about, like, are they gonna get their wishes done in time? Also, is anybody gonna, like, get there and stop them? Oh no, the dragon's gone. Oh no, Vegeta's here. Oh god, Frieza's here.
Yeah, all three of these episodes are full of things that I was not expecting to happen.
Yeah.
Alright, episode 77, the English title is The Fusion.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Birth of the Mightiest Warrior? Nail and Piccolo merge.
I appreciate the question mark. They weren't confident in making it a statement.
Is it?
The mightiest warrior? They wanted plausible deniability. He might be the strongest.
Maybe.
I, at this point, had forgotten Nail's name. And so I was just like, who the fuck are they talking about?
The episode begins with Frieza noting that the Ginyu Force is not around, and he gives the Z-Warriors some due credit for that. He's actually a little impressed.
He's weirdly chill about this. These are like his elite strike force.
Doesn't have to worry about that awkward crush he has anymore.
Taking care of.
He also doesn't have to watch them dance anymore.
I noted Frieza's chillness as him being out of fucks to give, because he's just ready to fight.
The spoon drawer is empty. There's only knives now.
He had to get out of his chair. He doesn't get his wishes.
Time to at least kill these people.
He's out of wine.
This was the first time that I noticed that Frieza doesn't have shoes.
Nope. Just those little feet.
Yeah,
he's got
weird feet.
Like, yeah. No heel or painted back nails. Toe or anything.
He paints his
on his little toesies.
He paints his fingernails and his toenails. They match.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just assumed that he had boots on like everybody else. And then he stepped forward and I was like, are his nails painted on his boots?
That's a choice.
The rest of the episode became fascinated by Frieza's feet.
He's like a new age CEO at a startup that's just like, barefoot's legal, man.
Well, he's got like the tops of boots, I just realized talking about this.
Yeah.
He's got intergalactic spats.
Yeah, it's the same with his hands. He's got like the wrist guards, but he doesn't have like the glove part.
Jason, I am just now envisioning Frieza in like a turtleneck and Birkenstocks.
Like some brown corduroy pants.
As he addresses the crowd at Freeze X.
Considering some of the stuff we've seen in the Discord, I will not be surprised if we see that at some point.
That specific image, you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, quick shout out to who makes these wonderful images again?
That is Fracky Fire.
Okay, yes. They're fucking amazing and fantastic. I'm so grateful for them.
Lately, of the incredible Goku and Ginyu Freaky Friday posters.
Goodness gracious!
Piccolo speeds his way to where he feels some giant power levels, but he also notices a fleeting one nearby. So he goes to investigate that, and he meets up with Nail.
At which point I said, "Oh, right, that guy."
I ship them so hard. I don't ship people very easily.
Yeah.
Until it's like made painfully obvious.
These two won you over.
They did. They're just like so. They're on the same wavelength. They're just so chill.
They had a good banter.
They did. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of people who are like oddly chill this week, Nail. Nail is channeling some Lebowski type shit.
Holy moly.
He took something.
He's got that Namekian gallows humor.
He had a little something something in his belt for exactly this purpose.
Man, you're too much. Just wait. You'll be begging to keep me around.
That's the other thing they cultivate alongside whatever trees they're trying to grow.
Namekians are plant-based.
Yeah.
Does that mean that, in theory, parts of their bodies could be hallucinogenic?
Oh.
Is that what Piccolo keeps in his knees?
I was just going to say exactly that.
Just in his knees. Those kind knees.
Well, like... three or four different fanfiction premises just came out of that.
Oh no.
The most potent distilled knee juice.
Nail gives Piccolo a warning of how strong Frieza truly is, and he says that if only Piccolo had come here as a whole being, he might have been strong enough to stand a chance.
Wow, harsh.
You can tell that?
I guess.
More to the point, is that true?
I don't think so.
Nah, like, don't think so.
Like, the person that left Namek was strong enough to beat Frieza?
The unnamed... so strong, his name is the fucking unnamed Namekian. Come on.
The unknown soldier.
Nail offers Piccolo the chance to unite together in order to amplify Piccolo's power. And Piccolo's a little hesitant at first. He's not... I mean... understandably so, he's concerned about what the hell that means.
Hey, do you want to live inside me?
He decides to give it a go, and he allows Nail to fuse together with him.
The shot of Nail disintegrating into pure energy is kind of horrifying, I'm not even going to lie. And it's right when we get to the commercial cut, so it's great. I remember there was some banter because, you know, early Funimation dub's all about that banter.
Sure.
Piccolo made a comment of I'm gonna start charging rent if you overstay your welcome or something.
Yeah.
And to which prompted me to write down the note, Piccolo, the body landlord.
I'm just thinking this is also perfect banter for, like, you know, your new green boyfriend moving in.
Mm-hmm. Permanently. That also is prompted by the question of Piccolo asking, "Will I still be me?"
Also a good question before getting into a relationship.
Very good, very existential. Good. I imagined the second he asked that for a zipper long leather coat, to just kind of materialize around him and an X to be added to his name.
Going into this episode, seeing the word fusion, I had some expectations.
Mm-hmm. We all did.
Were they met?
I thought there was a dance involved.
Mm-hmm.
That is and a slightly different concept.
I know, like, there's the fusion dance in Steven Universe, but, like...
Sure.
The fusion-ish stuff that I have seen very little of, but seen some of, from later in Dragon Ball, and they like, when they lean over and they touch fingers...
Yep.
Yeah.
What? That's adorable.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
I was very disappointed that this was just like, hey, let's chill, and then now we're just Piccolo still.
Yeah, I noted this as being a kind of a misnomer, because there is a very specific fusion concept later, and it ain't this.
No. Namekians do the fusion dance?
I mean, anybody can.
Yeah, I don't see why not. There's, like, a lot of really good art out there, official and otherwise, of some very good fusions that will show up later.
So I'm still waiting for dancing.
Yeah, fusion dance is different.
It is a ways away, but we will get there.
Namekian fusion just raises your MP to its highest power stage.
Yeah. Oh.
It increases your max battery by a lot.
It is a card, yeah. MP, I guess, is battery. And you rejuvenate, too.
I actually didn't realize you were...
You didn't notice that seamless transition into mm-hmm. card talk?
Beautifully done.
Piccolo has a fucking amazing monologue.
Oh my god.
In the English dub.
Jesus.
Starts rocking out to some Katy Perry.
Yep. Before we talk about it, I'm just going to play it in its entirety right now. Here you go.
Wow. Unreal. My gosh. This is amazing. I feel incredible. Yes, 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 yes. I can win. I feel great. I can do this. Ugh. Yes, I'm home. I'm alive. This is all a miracle. I'm awake. I'm wide awake. Hang on, Gohan! Here I come!
Thank you. He hoots like a frat boy about to do a keg stand.
I was about to say, then presumably he knocks back a monster and then crushes the can against his head.
Yeah.
The can is what remains of Nail's essence.
He just slugs back a tall glass of Nail.
Oh, it just picks up that spare arm from forever ago. Just,
considering the way that Nail talks, I could actually legitimately see him as the kind of person who slams monster and then crushes the cans against his forehead.
After this, he rushes off to the rescue, feeling very energized.
Not sleepy at all.
No, wide awake.
Yeah, whatever Nail was taking seemed to act as a depressant, but in Piccolo it's a stimulant.
Vegeta goes toe-to-toe with Frieza, and Krillin and Gohan plan to attack while Frieza is distracted, but that proves to be trickier than they expected, because Frieza has no trouble fending them all off at once, and he's smiling the whole time.
So strong.
Vegeta's not worried yet, because he's definitely a Super Saiyan.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
He's working on it.
He's not, though, is he?
He is. He said it.
Yeah. Oh.
I believe him, don't you?
Yeah.
I was looking to the experts here.
I mean, he has not presented any evidence that confirms it, but he did say it.
Yeah. He's working on it. It's a process.
He's the prince. So
he's the prince of all Saiyans.
He's self-actualizing.
He's the prince of all three, well, two and a half Saiyans.
Two and a half Saiyans. Saiyan, 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 Saiyan.
He doesn't say he's going to say he's Super Saiyan. He says he'll be a Super Saiyan soon.
Yeah,
he's on the way.
Vegeta, make up your mind.
Yeah. Well, hang on. Doesn't that make him, like, the king of all Saiyans, technically?
Nope.
Okay.
He's the prince.
All right, fine.
It sounds cooler.
It makes him feel youthful.
Also, when Vegeta mentions the prospect of himself being a Super Saiyan, there is a cut for like 0.75 seconds to Frieza just going, with exciting and dynamic act like motion lines behind him. The most exciting I've ever seen.
There's a great line in the Japanese version here after Gohan and Krillin are like, we can't beat this guy. And Frieza says, did you think that only three ants could defeat a dinosaur?
Shit.
Wow.
That's
Aesop shit.
He makes an incredible point.
I wouldn't be surprised if he could turn into a dinosaur.
Vegeta and Frieza begin to grapple so hard that they make a crater under their own feet.
That owns.
It's really
and
cool.
During this exchange, Frieza's scouter explodes off of his face, so we are all out of scouters again.
Damn.
The briefcase was for nothing.
This is probably the... To date, this is probably the greatest day in Vegeta's life. He is grappling, blow for blow, with Frieza.
Mm-hmm. After killing Zarbon and Dodoria.
Yeah.
And getting to beat up Goku, sort of.
Took a good nap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Super Saiyan needs his rest.
This is a great day for Vegeta.
I imagine, running through his head before it begins. As he rushes up to meet, clasp hands together, it's that, feeling before you drop on a fucking roller coaster or something. Like, is this gonna be all right? And then, oh, okay, we're doing okay. I'm holding in there. This might work out.
Just a heavy rush of adrenaline.
Vegeta wants Frieza to stop playing around and tells him to just transform already.
Transform already?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
Similar to Zarbon, Frieza is concealing his true form because his powers are so extremely extraordinary that even he can't have a full control over them. So he keeps them bottled up.
Vegeta says that Zarbon is the person who told us this factoid. Refresh my memory. Did that actually happen?
I don't remember. He might have. Or he whispered it.
Or maybe it happened in the Japanese version and they just forgot to dub that part.
maybe.
Could very well be the case as well. What they don't forget to do is add dialogue, like Frieza wanting a countdown and Vegeta begrudgingly acquiescing.
Jesus, this is the best exchange.
That came out of fucking nowhere.
Frieza loves him a good countdown.
Hide and seek countdown.
They looked at their script and they're like, huh, we're a couple minutes short. How do we stretch for a bit?
Mm-hmm.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh my god, Vegeta just does the brattiest fucking acquiesce to this ridiculous countdown.
This bratty ass request.
This is divas in the presence of divas, let's be honest.
This episode ends with Frieza blasting his chest armor off. Truly a thrilling transformation.
This looks wrong
just
to me.
Just takes off his clothes.
Just gets naked.
Part of them.
He has to Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, I don't need to see this, Tyler. I don't need to know what lies beneath. This is like Vegeta Gloveless. Like, come on. There are kids watching this show.
Wait, he still had, more armor underneath, didn't he?
Did he?
Well, he has, chitin.
Yeah, it's like his just bulky skin armor.
I legitimately can't tell. There's things on the side of Frieza's head that look like earpieces or something, but I'm pretty sure they're just part of his head.
Yeah.
It's I'm not saying this is a problem. I actually like his design a lot, but it's strange.
He's got a weird bone structure on his head. That forms his brow, and it's just this really I don't know if is it tough? Is it pliable?
He's like a Cubone.
Yes.
Oh no.
Wow.
Wearing
and
the skull of his
and
mother.
I realize the implications of saying that.
Whoops, yeah, I'm going on a trip right now.
I will note that throughout this episode, and I think into the next one, we see flashes of Goku occasionally, with voiceover of his thinking, I guess. There's none of that in the Japanese version. It's just Goku being... Sleepy boy in a tank.
Probably for the better, because in English we usually just get him going, whoa!
Yeah.
Krillin! Well, they reuse those same five frames of animation of him in the tank.
Yeah.
Like 10 episodes in a row.
Mm-hmm. He's only in there for an hour.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
The useless dialogue that they threw away for that great countdown was actually Frieza taunting Vegeta about destroying his planet and about how weak his father was.
Kind of setting up events for the next episode.
Mm. Yeah, a little bit. Mm. A little bit.
But a countdown was essential.
It's
true.
Where would we be without that countdown?
I had one more stupid thing. I don't know if anybody else thought of this, but when Vegeta's trying to hype up Gohan and Krillin that they can indeed beat Frieza, and Gohan says, wow, maybe he's right. And he says it in the exact same cadence that part of your world starts with. And I'm really going to need Gohan to break into song at some point.
Wait, I'm trying to...
I want to beam where the Frieza is.
Thank you. I want to blast him into nothing.
You generate these in about 0.5 seconds, Aaron.
This is how I spend my day. I just sing about whatever I'm doing.
Ariel does not realize how good she has it. No. Most days I want to be where the people are not.
Well, Ariel's an extrovert, okay?
Yeah, we need the introvert version of that song. Someday I'll be chilling in my room.
I think we touched on this very early on. There's not any Dragon Ball musicals, are they?
Sadly, not that I could find.
No?
Okay. We're going to have to write one ourselves.
Somebody needs to
get on
that.
It's becoming more evident.
For sure. Is this Dave typing a new
Just gonna verify this if I can.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. That's one task I cannot take on. I cannot write lyrics.
Yeah, I just see a Reddit thread and not much.
Yeah, stage shows are the hot shit right now. Haikyuu had one, and Phoenix Wright.
Shrek got a musical.
I think Kenshin had one recently.
Really?
Maybe it was just a play.
What kind of fucking terrible musical group can we tap to provide the music and lyrics for this? A la U2 and the Spider-Man musical.
Oh.
Oh, you know who I heard on the radio today that I had forgotten about was a little group called Stained.
Oh, yeah.
Called what?
Yeah. Bring that in.
Stained.
You heard them on the radio.
That sounds like a band that was prominent in the early 2000s.
It was. It was
AKA
so good.
Just an artistically derelict decade.
How dare you?
My first instinct was Aerosmith.
Okay.
We just call it Beam On.
Beam On.
Shucks.
Beam till your dreams That's pretty come good. True.
I was going to say, like, what's Panic at the Disco doing right now?
I don't know. I can't help you there. My first thought was Smash Mouth, but I was thinking about Shrek.
Let's you done did that to yourself.
How much of every day is spent thinking about Shrek?
Listen, let's think about how Shrek has a musical.
So there's something really wholesome and
Shrek.
Great
about... Try to make fun of that, the people around me get angry and say, no, it's a really good musical. So I feel
like
to
no,
say
no, Aaron, stick to your guns. I've watched like the opening 10 minutes on Netflix and I could not sit through it.
That is like an especially powerful statement coming from you.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I've seen some shit.
Yeah.
Multiple times. Fucking watch Jurassic School 5 times in a row and then come at me.
Yeah.
Then we'll talk.
Wait,
Jurassic School? What?
Find it on Netflix. It's real good.
Let me write this down.
When I was in California, I was telling my friends there about some of the shitty movies that we have watched, and I realized that all of them star dogs. And then, like, at the end of the week, Eric was like, you know, every movie you've told me about has a dog in it.
You're on to me. Yeah, I went into fucking Target and I paid $10 for a movie called Paws P.I. that stars John Lovitz as a dog. And I watched the whole thing, but I couldn't watch Shrek the Musical.
Holy shit.
I rest my case.
Leonard Cohen died, right?
He did.
Okay. Yeah.
I think.
We'll just wish him back to Dragon Balls.
God damn it.
Yo-Yo Ma is still alive.
Yes.
Yo-Yo Ma is like down to clown with some stuff too, though.
It's a cold and it's a broken Kamehameha.
Okay. Episode 78 of Dragon Ball Z. The English title of that episode is Fighting Power 1 Million.
The Japanese title roughly translates to...
You don't really care for beaming, do ya?
I can't!
It's getting
to
worse.
Get the Dragon Balls.
It's not getting better, it's getting worse.
I promise you I found them all. Turn to stone before I could wish for ya.
This is a good time to plug your improv show.
I am sweating. This is my
level. You did your best to put this back on track, and it didn't work. It's not your fault. You can't be faulted.
Aaron's too strong.
Yeah, can't. Aaron's power level.
Aaron's
is
got
too high.
Fucking singing power 1 million.
I need a sense supine. I can't top that, but I can do my best with the Japanese title, which is...
Please do.
A Nightmare Super Transformation Frieza's Battle Power of 1 million.
Oh, boy. How many question marks do they have?
There are 2 exclamation points after super transformation and no punctuation after 1 million.
Ah.
So I'm up in the air, personally.
That's a wash, I think.
Yeah.
Frieza continues his transformation, but he takes a short break to give us all a flashback to King Vegeta.
Who's British?
I love this flashback a lot. It's very good.
Melissa, feel free to stop me whenever the timelines diverge, because I feel like it's about to happen soon.
Oh, boy.
We learn that Frieza took custody of Prince Vegeta at a young age, and King Vegeta formed a squadron to try and take down Frieza and reclaim his son.
Okay, I watched the dub of this scene first, had no fucking clue what was happening, went back, watched the Japanese, figured out what was happening, went back and watched the English again... to try to check and see if all the pieces were there.
Sort of bridge the two.
Yeah, yeah. The tone is very different in all of this, in that King Vegeta seems to Frieza's face to be not happy about him taking little Vegeta.
His little boy?
Yeah. Though then when his... I don't know, the other guy is like, are you sure? And King Vegeta says he's not really concerned about Prince Vegeta's life. He's more concerned that Frieza is treating the Saiyans like they're like his slaves, and isn't happy with that. This whole section I feel like was not translated great, maybe, or maybe
probably
I was
not.
Just tired, which is also a possibility.
I feel like a lot of Vegeta's backstory that we're going to be learning about in the next few episodes is engineered by Funimation to add some pathos to him and make us sort of more endeared towards him if we weren't already.
Mm. Yeah,
sort of tragic figure.
Yeah,
whereas they are not as concerned with that in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to give a shout-out, though, to the fashion happening in the Royal Guard Chambers.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea about how his Royal Guard has the spiky shoulder pads, but they're used as a base for, like, a wraparound cloak that goes around the length of the pads. That's a great look! Fantastic look! And we get the one... I noticed some of the background Saiyans had, like, the one shoulder pad that was spiky, and then the one the other shoulder was, like, a Saiyan armor tank top style, like we've seen.
Gordy, you and I both noted something sort of funny about King Vegeta's exchange with his guard in the English dub, anyway, where the guard is like, "I couldn't bear to give up Prince Vegeta." And King Vegeta's like, "Yeah, me neither." And then he does.
He says, "I'd rather die than give up Prince Vegeta." And King Vegeta basically says, "Me too. Anyway, I did."
Anyway, I didn't die, and I did do it.
So, right there.
You really wouldn't rather die because you did it.
Fighting Frieza's all about timing. You've got to time that revolution just right.
I mean, you can sure try.
King Vegeta tries to attack Frieza on his ship.
He boards his ship with a squadron of his best men, and while he's giving them an inspiring speech, very inappropriate mouth harp music plays. Dangerous Men-esque music. And also, they charge in, and King Vegeta yells, "Some of you, go, take that way!" He's a master of strategy. The great king of the Saiyans.
Good lord.
I wrote that down too. It was amazing.
Some of you, I don't know, maybe check over there.
I did notice that. I don't care. 1, 10, it doesn't matter.
Whatever.
Decide amongst yourselves.
This is what I have officers for.
They're big into individuality. You do you.
King Vegeta tries to lunge at Frieza when he finds him, but he's defeated in a single punch. And then Frieza disintegrates King Vegeta and his whole army with a single beam from his eyes.
He makes sure to take off the scouter first. He's made that mistake before.
Probably several times.
Before, I also wrote down,
Sarban
before...
Sarban has been getting on his ass about it, and he's just not feeling it today.
Yeah. Right before the Saiyans burst in, Frieza, like, chuckles and makes a joke at their expense, says, "Monkey see, monkey do." And when he says that, Sarban just goes... Like this light gasp. I don't know what that response was.
Probably very offensive.
He scandalized. Needs to report this to HR.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is a bummer because HR just got blown up.
For some reason I had this idea that Dodoria was HR. I don't know.
I think we did establish that previously.
I think, yeah, we made that part up.
But Dodoria doesn't like Saiyans either.
You are succumbing to the disease that I have, where I can't remember what we made up and what is canon.
What is canon, and what is destructo canon?
At this point, I choose not to differentiate.
Yeah, it's easier.
It's all
that
the same.
Way.
We find out that this was all transpiring at the same time that Bardock was mounting his rebellion.
Like because I said, we cut you've to time those rebellions perfectly.
We cut to footage from the Bardock special. Just reused whole cloth.
So this
and looks pretty different.
I've got some notes about this. This sequence is the fucking saddest thing I have ever witnessed. It is dark side story to the Bardock special, basically. And what it means is that Frieza emerging from his ship, blowing up Planet Vegeta, had nothing to do with Bardock. Like, mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, like, Bardock's making a big ruckus in space, knocking off Frieza Force everywhere, so Frieza's got to bring out the big guns, awards Bardock with his presence, only to disintegrate him moments later. He was just there. He just happened to be in the way.
Frieza probably didn't even hear him.
Yeah.
it was in both timelines are just unrelated incidents.
Yeah, it is the most tragic thing because that's how it goes down for Goku's dad. That's how it shakes out.
So someone in the special, I think it might have been Matt, asked, "Where was King Vegeta in this whole movie?" And now we know.
Oh boy,
that's where he was. Ouch. Being blown up.
He was becoming plot. A smudge on the floor.
As we cut back to reality. Back to the present timeline, Vegeta is briefly drawn in the wrong armor.
Yes, I did not notice that.
Yep. I missed that.
Whoa.
There is a scene, it's like a back shot of Frieza staring at everybody, and the Z-Warriors are in the distance, and it's a distance model of Vegeta in his Saiyan armor from Earth.
Oh, he's got the pads. Okay.
He's got the pads and he's got the blue, the light blue jammies. Same as Gohan.
Wow. That's pretty funny.
He scoffs at Frieza and says, "You wiped out every Saiyan, but you left the strongest one alive." It's like, yes, Vegeta, that's accurate, but I assume you're talking about yourself, so he's still wrong.
He's sitting over in that tank.
Yep.
Yeah.
Frieza begins his transformation again, and it sounds painful. He just starts kind of screaming and
it's
crunching.
It's visceral.
He's just fucking with them, right?
But, oh, for sure.
Like, this isn't his
final form.
This entire arc
not
has
even
been him fucking with them.
Fair.
The fucking has yet to begin.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
I want to make a quick sidebar, because before all this bullshit transpired, we had a cutaway for 45 seconds of Bulma running from Dragon Ball dinos no discernible reason.
Shit! Yeah. It's just a reminder that she's alive.
I love Bulma content. I will be the first up to bat for Bulma content, but why was this here?
Frieza grows to a massive, beefy height, and his horns twist into a bowl-like shape.
Very cool.
And his voice is deep now.
Out of curiosity, because this is my wheelhouse, I did time his transformation, not counting that he's spent the whole fucking first half of the episode, like, tease transforming.
Yeah.
But the actual active transformation, I did time that against Sailor Moon's transformation.
What's
and
the word?
What are the results of this science?
Frieza is absolutely longer. by almost 15, 20 seconds.
Wow.
The Sailor Moon transformations vary depending on season, you know. But if you take her very first original transformation, it's 41 seconds. And Frieza's was about 56 seconds. So
what I'm hearing from you is that this leaves ample time for Sailor Moon to defeat Frieza in the interim.
Yeah, absolutely.
Frieza's tail can extend and retract extreme lengths now, and he tries to skewer the Z-Warriors with it.
With a weirdly mechanical noise.
Yeah. This freaky Roto-Rooter tail.
The transformation and then the tail was all very yucky. It's a lot of unpleasant bulging.
Describes a surprising number of moments on this show.
It's an alternate title for Dragon Ball Z.
It's a lot of unpleasant bulging across the board.
Frieza nonchalantly mentions that his power level in this form is greater than 1 million.
Which seems like cheating.
Where's the data to back that up?
Yeah, where's the scouter, Frieza?
He conveniently got rid of all the scouters.
Yeah. Huh.
Coincidence?
With a flick of his wrist, Frieza blows them all away, and he changes the damn tides on Namek.
Wow, yeah. This arc is the one that really dives deep into, like, the heavy planetary destruction. And I'm all for it.
Even Bulma is blown away, and she is miles from the fight.
Yeah.
Everybody sort of hovers above Frieza, who's now just admiring his handiwork as the rapids of the ocean sort of coalesce around him.
Who now delivers the Sans monologue from Undertale. Straight up just says, like, the sun is shining, the ocean is beautiful, you can see the mountains from the distance. On days like today, Saiyans like you
should be burning in HFIL.
You got it.
Frieza takes his time picking out who he wants to murder first, and he eventually sets his sight on Krillin, who he skewers immediately with his horns.
Once again, Saiyan armor has no idea how to handle anything sharp.
Any kind really of like cutting implement.
Conceptually, like, after all this powering up, like, you don't need a lot of power just to stab a dude. It's very ordinary violence.
You can just do
after
it.
After such an extraordinary show of power.
It's so really simple and also really gruesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen Yeah, we've seen some pretty, like, gross annihilations on this show so far of, like, people getting disintegrated, blown up, holes blasted through them, but somehow, like, being impaled on the horns of this bull seems way more, like, visceral.
Well, it's more plot. You can imagine that easier, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, it feels more like Krillin's just, like, a guy.
Yeah, Krillin is, yeah.
A very squishy dude.
Yeah.
The episode ends with things not looking very good for Krillin. He is kind of just shocked at what is happening to his body now.
Oh, the narrator called it already. The narrator already called Time of Death.
Time of Death, episode 78.
The narrator also went to the trouble at the beginning of this one, I believe, saying that, you know, will Goku, the Saiyan from Earth, be able to save the day? And it's like, yeah, we know who Goku is. And if we didn't, calling him the Saiyan from Earth would not help anything, because I don't think we would know what a Saiyan is.
All right. Everybody good on these episodes?
Good.
So good.
We will turn our vision over to Hail Satan, then.
Hail Satan.
What's Earth been up to lately?
Well, we should briefly mention some developments during the Bardock special.
Yeah.
Because our boy Hercule was born the same year as Goku, so we had to talk about him.
Oh, yeah.
We found out that Mark was also found in the woods by Grandpa Gohan. But Grandpa Gohan didn't really like the look of that baby, so he just put it back down, went on his way.
So did he come across Hercule first?
He did.
Okay.
And he made a promise to himself that he would keep the next naked boy he found in the woods.
And so it was Goku. Stuck with Goku.
We learned that Jocko, the space patroller, accidentally brought Hercule to Earth from Raccoon's homeworld, which, as we know, is a homeworld of shapeshifters that can emulate the shape of other alien species. So Mark is a shape-shifting alien, but he doesn't know it because his brother Raccoon never came to tell him.
Oh boy.
And he was raised by a Dragon Ball character named Boss Rabbit or Monster Carrot in Japan, which was just a big anthropomorphic rabbit. And he raised Mark for a time, but then they also lost him. Or maybe straight up abandoned him.
Mark is just forever becoming a copy of, like, Midtown Madness 3 for Xbox that just travels from GameStop to GameStop in the hands of young gamers. Stickers upon stickers littering the case as trade-in after trade-in occurs.
Holy shit, Jay. My entire childhood just zoomed past my eyes like hyperspace in Star Wars when you said the name of that game. Wow. It's probably been over a decade since I have thought about that game.
I've got a whole rant for that that I'll save for off screen.
Okay.
I did want to add an addendum that I didn't think of during the Bardock special, but I have since thought of about his time with Boss Rabbit. Boss Rabbit is a character whose power is he turns anything he touches into a carrot, sort of like King Midas, but with vegetables.
Okay. That sounds more useful than King Midas, honestly.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say the reason that he didn't just turn Hercule into a carrot and eat him, which is what he usually did, is he kept trying to, and he would always shapeshift back.
He's immune.
So he just decided to keep him around.
Yeah, but he kept the fluffy hair of the top of the carrot. He retained into his original.
And then
he would
just slowly morph back into a baby.
And just turned green.
Like a scene from Akira.
So at one point, Hercule was in touch with his shape-shifting powers.
As an infant.
At least an instinct for it.
It's in the same way that Goku would sometimes be a big monkey and not know it.
Right.
Well, I wonder if he noticed it, and Boss Rabbit was just like, it is a trick. It's pyrotechnics.
It's pyrotechnics.
It's mirrors or something.
So back in present day, the thing that we left off on is that the bad chicks traveling with Videl were hunting down the Dragon Balls, which didn't exist, but now do.
Oh, yeah, they just got live Dragon Balls dropped into their operation. I have been trying to think of a way to shoehorn Ginyu with frog brain into this. I'm still empty-handed. But that does put...
Purunga's kind of a mischievous trickster who's very all about rules. Maybe he's interested in conserving the mass on different worlds, and when he teleported Piccolo to Namek, he had to teleport somebody of similar mass back.
The frog's much smaller.
We just have
though.
To do, like, equivalent wait, exchange. Wait. There has to be a switch.
Are we talking about the body of Captain Ginyu with the frog brain?
Yes.
I misunderstood.
I want it off
okay.
of Namek, and I want it to come into its full powers.
Have its own adventure.
I don't care
see. I was
how
gonna say,
happens.
I was gonna say that there was some lingering muscle memory in the body, and it managed to find its way back to his pod and just left.
That works
ooh.
For me.
Yeah,
and it's just going on a space adventure.
Which also means that everywhere that the pod lands, regardless of whether it has any other sense of like. Safe self-awareness or identity, it still does awesome poses when it gets out of the pod.
Oh, look.
For,
I mean,
for
yeah.
whoever happens to be watching.
Froggy Sentai! Froggy Sentai!
Which also means that what has to happen...
Body with Captain Ginyu inside of it, like, is that able to... Can that hitch a ride in the pod?
It needs to stay on Namek.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because it has plot still.
Oh,
yeah, this is a quest-giving NPC.
Ooh. So that this also means that what has to happen is that eventually, either sooner or later, the pod gets to Earth. The bat ticks track the pod down, and Frog and you comes out, does some incredible poses, and then Launcher shoots him a couple hundred times
for fun.
Leaves him for dead in the desert.
Does
but he's fine.
Does Captain Ginyu, with his advanced speed and senses? And his frog brain try to eat the bullets because he thinks they're flies.
They're just yummy, yummy flies.
Does he succeed to eat the bullets?
Yes, he does. He just grabs all of them.
We don't know what his species
is. He's in a body that can certainly withstand something as trivial as a bullet.
Earth bullets?
Yeah.
That thing can fucking withstand atmospheric reentry. So, King Yama... He's at the check-in station in the afterlife. Guy with a furry jaguar head. Okay, next, clouds with halos. Next, you go here, you go to hell. Next, giant beefy dragon with a halo. Does that happen?
Hand in hand with a big Namekian.
Yeah.
Like Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Dragon, Namekian dragon! It's me and it's you! Yama's gonna need some explaining.
Does Namek not have its own afterlife?
Good point.
It's all this galaxy. It's
oh,
all
you're
under
right.
the domain of King Kai.
Yeah, that's oh. all under his jurisdiction. So it would go to the check-in station.
What?
So,
is that Melissa? Check-in stations?
How is he not busier?
Or do different planets have different check-in stations?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I think it has to be that. Because
yeah.
we only ever see human-type people in that other world.
Mm-hmm. And there's, like, clouds and stuff.
Yeah, but...
Those are just Earthos that they didn't feel like drawing out.
That would be coincidental. In a way that I don't like.
We should close out soon. But in order for this segment to still be called Hail Satan, we should probably mention either Hercule or Videl.
Well, Hercule was teaming up with Sensu, right, to go
yeah.
chase down the bad chicks.
He and the farmer were chasing down the bad chicks to rescue Videl.
How's that
and
going?
The bad chicks were looking for Dragon Balls in the desert and shooting Captain Ginyu.
Well, did that happen already? Or did,
it
did
might.
It take, or did it take Ginyu a while to get here?
Probably takes him a while. It took everybody else a few days to get to Namek.
Yeah. So I guess that means that they're following in the wake, or attempting to follow in the wake, of their hunt for the Dragon Balls.
Are they the first to actually find one once they come back?
Good.
Do they just luck their way into finding one?
Tensu and Hercule?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yep, they probably just find one in the ocean or something. There's always an ocean one, come on.
Hercule's doing something very stupid that is a complete waste of time that he should be using rescuing his daughter and just happens to trip
his only child.
Happens to trip over a Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I like all these MacGuffins that we thought were going to just be a big wild goose chase for the bad chicks. Whoops, they're back. They're back and they're ready.
Jason.
Yeah.
You have a reading for us.
I do. It is a 4-star reading. Here's the thing. As you may know, some of these characters in Dragon Ball Z have canonical birthdays and thus canonical astrological signs. So what we like to do at the very end is flip open to the horoscope section and read off a little fortune for one of these anime boys. The subject of this particular reading is Piccolo, who has a canonical birthday of May 9th, which makes him a Taurus.
Is that when the egg hatched or when it came out of his dad's mouth?
I have no idea. Actually, real talk, there was that one very famous scene from Dragon Ball that declares a certain day as Piccolo Day.
As Piccolo Day?
Yup. It is May 9th. That is probably what they're basing this on.
So that's King Piccolo's birthday.
Yeah.
I see.
It is, I guess they're making it, they're transferring it over? Whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Birthdays are odd, you know?
Yeah.
So, Piccolo, canonical, I guess, Taurus. So here is your reading. Today you will meet up with a very important partner. This is the support you've been looking for. Together, the two of you can work energies that you could never have done by working alone, so think big. One of your meetings today may also involve someone from the past, whom you once cared for and have forgotten as time has passed by. Now, find each other again and let life take you by surprise.
What is your criteria for looking up these horoscopes, Jay? Like, how does it actually work?
Don't blame me. Blame the stars.
I'm just, like, what... Is it for this year? Is it for the year that... How does it work? Like...
It is, for... The day that we record is the day I hunt for horoscopes.
So it's up to date?
Yeah.
Just based on the sign. Well, thank you all for listening again to this podcast, Destructo Discourse. Gordy, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me, best places on Twitter, at Gordon Murphy, D-E-V, and then you can find Tyler and I on another podcast called What the Folklore, which is every Tuesday and most Sundays.
Depending
on travel schedules.
You can find that at WTFolklorePodcast.com. Jason, how about you?
Well, on the internet, you can find me on Twitter and on Tumblr, and the name for both is JCAVS. That's JAYCALVES.
Aaron?
I don't do much on the internet, but if you are in the southwest portion of the Ohio state, the state of Ohio, I forgot for a second what state I'm in.
The Buckeye State.
I perform weekly at the Black Box Improv Theater in Dayton, Ohio. I perform on Wednesdays, but the theater also has shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Melissa, how about you?
I use a variety of social media platforms that I update in varying degrees. At Kristaia, KRISTAIA. Lately, I've been on Twitter and Instagram, but, you know, I'm around.
Dave, how about you?
I am at Scythe, PSYTHE, on Archive of Our Own.
And if you would like to contact this show, there's a myriad ways to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on Twitter. The handle for that is @destructo_disc, where you can also see illustrated versions of Hail Satan. You can also contact us at Gmail, which is destructodiscourse@gmail.com. And we also have a fan interaction Discord server, which is the Destructo Discourse Discourse Discord. And the invite to join that is permanently pinned on Twitter, so you don't have to remember it. You can just go there and click it. Is there anything else that I usually say at the end that I'm not remembering?
Well, you know, if you're looking at this on iTunes, it might be good, if you could, to maybe leave a review. But wait, how many stars should we leave again? Like
4.
Oh, yes, that was it. 4 stars.
Now, why is that?
Well, I think it's something
it's
to
gone.
Do... Yeah, yeah, okay. I
see those 5-star reviews. I get suspicious. Like, how? Mm.
I do too.
How did they get that?
I don't think they listen to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. We're on to you. Give us the Gohan.
Give us the Gohan. Thank you all for listening. This has been Destructo Discourse. We will see you next week. If the road ahead you seem so cold and gray, when night never turns to day, don't you be afraid, to fly away. Chala, chala, no time to hesitate, don't want to search the earth, but then it was a magic surprise. Oh, chala, chala, be cool, don't be afraid, you got the power to get you through the